Once I was the king of Spain.
Now I eat humble pie.
Oh, my unspeakable wife, Queen Lisa.
Now I eat humble pie.
I'm telling you, I was the king of Spain.
Now I eat humble pie.
And now I work at the pizza pizza.
1, 2, 3, 4. Ba-da-ba-ba-da.
Welcome to Talking Giants, presented by SeatGeek. I'm your host, Bobby Skinner, here with my co-host, Justin Penick. We got first time on the show, Ryan Dunleavy. So we talked about all about OTA, some other stuff, Saquon Barkley. And actually, we were planning for the interview to be about 30 to 35 minutes, and we couldn't stop talking at the end. So I thought there was some fun stuff about just like covering the New York Giants and some honesty from Dunleavy where other reporters might try and play too cool for school. Justin, how are you?
Yeah, and also Ryan, like, if he knows something or if he's heard something, he told us, like, here, this is what I've heard, not just kind of giving us his opinion. You know, hey, this is what I've heard. I've heard this from somebody in the Giants building. And he literally gave that from start to finish. So you got to listen to the whole thing. A lot of fun with Ryan Dunleavy.
I think it was the best Saquon conversation we've had with any reporter, too.
Yeah. At the end, we reached like a conclusion where it's like, This is a really weird situation, and Saquon Barkley has really kind of screwed himself.
Yeah,
which we knew that.
Before we get into this episode, Justin, this episode is brought to you by some special people. Eric Sturmer, he's very stern in what he wants. John Blaze, I feel like John Blaze was already a Patreon, but we welcome you back,
Blaze. Great name.
Bill Hartnett. How could you be so heartless? Michael Klopchin. He's got a stronger chin than Dallas Goedert, I can tell you that. Steven Ghost to Patreon.com. And Connor, just regular old Connor. Connor, he's a press Connor. Justin, who are these people?
I know Connor. I went to high school and college with Connor.
How do you know? He has no last name.
Well, he messaged me on Instagram and he said, I'm going to subscribe to Patreon. So
thank you, Connor.
That means a lot. And Connor's a really good dude. Huh?
Can he play press man?
He can play press man. I think he's like a state trooper. Like, and he can beat the shit out of me too. So, patreon.com/talkofgiants.
Never mind.
What are you gonna say?
I was gonna say and get away with it.
And get away with it, yeah. Because that's sure. I wouldn't tell. Connor's a good friend, and he subscribed to Patreon. So if you see me in the streets and you're subscribed to Patreon, you can beat the shit out of me and I won't say anything. Patreon.com/talkofgiants. That's one of the perks. Beat the shit out of Justin. Plus, you get to watch the shows live as we record them. Bobby Skinner will send you some stickers in the mail. Plus, there's some shirt raffles a couple times a month. Patreon.com/talkofgiants. You can beat the shit out of me.
All right. Before we get into the Dunleavy interview, we'll hit some stuff from OTAs. Just a couple of housekeeping ones. John Michael Smith's dead snap is a go. We kind of thought that would happen, but then it's like, well, I mean, he can adjust, right? Like, I'm not worried about Smith adjusting, but I like him keeping it at least to start because his hand usage is elite and the dead snap helps you use your hands quicker. And I just don't want to mess with that, especially for a rookie. And it's just, hey, Daniel Jones, can you get used to more of a wobbly snap? And he said, hey, as long as it's accurate, I'm fine. So I'm happy with that. Not any big takeaway. The green dot, I thought we had answers on it. We don't. The first day we get a picture of Bobby Okereke with the green dot. Like, there we go. And then the next day, Xavier McKinney has it. So they truly are testing it out. Dunleavy in the interview says last year they gave it to the linebackers too this time of year, but they didn't. Unless we just didn't notice it. But last year, it was very clear.
Love and McKinney both had it in camp last year.
But it was only safeties, essentially, had the green dot. So the fact that Okereke is getting a shot at it means that they weren't – let's just say this. If they were super thrilled, like McKinney, green dot, then he would have that job.
Correct.
You know, and you can't say it's because the safety depth doesn't have a real answer because the linebacker depth doesn't have an answer after Okereke either. So I'm rooting for Okereke to get the green dot. I just think it works better with what we're doing. And hey, run defense needs to improve, and I want Okereke leading the way on that.
Yeah, I'm rooting for Okereke to get it too, simply because I want Xavier McKinney to be a playmaker this year. I don't want Xavier McKinney having to think I want him doing. And that's not a referendum on McKinney. I think, you know, Dunleavy talks in the interview about how Xavier McKinney, he wants that green dot. He wants that responsibility of kind of leading that defense in that way. I want Xavier McKinney back there being a playmaker for the New York Football Giants and a defense that did not make a lot of plays last year. So let Bobby Okereke do it. Let Bobby Okereke wear that green dot. And I agree. The fact that they are letting Okereke do it at this stage means something.
Yeah. Like McKinney probably ends up winning it out because it would be hard to take that away from McKinney. But the fact that Okereke is doing it is like they are, hopefully they do give this a fair shot.
I mean, it's not that, I don't think it's that. Why do you say it's so tough to take it away from or difficult to take it away from?
I mean, he's a team captain. It's just dealing with human beings.
Okereke could come and wear the C.
Sure. But if I'm Xavier McKinney, and I'm a captain of a team, I'm green dot, and then the next year that gets stripped away from me, it just sucks. Even if, yeah, you get in line and you play, I'm not saying McKinney's going to be disgruntled, but it's hard to do that to a human being, like giving them the responsibility and then just take it away.
I mean, I think if they go about it from the perspective of exactly like I'm saying, of this is not a referendum on you. This is a referendum on how we want you to not think. We want you to go out there. We want you to play loose. We want you to play fast. And then also, last year, I would say, okay, who are you going to give it to? Tay Crowder and, you know, a rookie in Darian Beavers, Micah McFadden, and then they signed Jalen Smith early in the season. So you weren't going to give it to one of those guys, especially if the safeties were wearing it in the camp to begin with. And
Blake at that time. I mean, it was just because the last year the safeties getting it wasn't a linebacker combo. It was just Wink gives it the safeties conversation.
Well, I was even thinking like maybe they knew what they were going to do with Blake Martinez for a while. You know, they had a whole offseason with Blake Martinez. Maybe they knew that he wasn't in it as fully as they wanted him to. So I understand what you're saying, but I don't think it's so offensive. I know this is a human business too. I don't think it's so offensive to McKinney to take that away with him because you have Bobby Okereke.
I mean, eventually he'd get over it, but it's just McKinney, you're taking it away from somebody.
Right.
You know, where if this was just, hey, Okereke was signed as a free agent their first year there, no big deal. But it's always hard to strip a responsibility away from somebody.
It's a
convo. No matter what the reasoning is.
And it's something to keep an eye on. What did a Twitter vote? Did Twitter vote 54%, 46% that McKinney keeps it?
Yeah. Which I think is where my head is at too, where it's like this, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. But the fact that Okereke is getting a shot at it is interesting. Other thing is, I'm trying my hardest to not get hyped up about OTA tweets about all the big plays.
Can't.
Waller. It's really hard not to, though, because it's like they do have new additions that are fast, speed. Darren Waller, like the best big play tight end in the NFL, like had the most big plays last year and missed like what, 11 games?
Had more 20-plus yard catches than any other Giants receiver or Giants target on the team last year, and he played like 9 games.
Than any tight end in the NFL last year.
Yeah.
Or might have been tied for first with Kelce.
It was like 14 20-plus yard catches last year.
Yeah. But you do have to remind yourself, it is OTAs. Remember this time last year we're talking about the offense, like, hey, they're going to have all these option choice routes. They're not going to be afraid to make mistakes. And then they scrapped all of that 2 weeks into the season and had the best turnover rate in the NFL. So they're testing things out, but here's the little bit of excitement is that is what they want to do. This isn't a coaching staff who comes in and is, we are going to get 10 yards every 3 plays, bang, bang, bang. That's our ideal offense. Their ideal offense is getting chunk, and not just saying you want to create explosives, but have the body of work that's the way they like to live. So,
and we know that they'll adjust. We know that they'll adjust even if that doesn't happen. So that's the fun thing too, is that we have a coach. You know, it's not just the opposite end of Jason Garrett, right? Where Jason Garrett was looking to get 10 yards every 3 plays, and then there was no alternative to that. And then there is an alternative to the ideal world of Brian Daboll and Mike Kafka. If we want to produce those chunk plays, and if they're not producing those chunk plays, the offense isn't bad. It's still livable. It's still survivable. But the thing that I'm looking at for Darren Waller, because so many people have talked about Darren Waller, you know, he's going to operate and serve as this X wide receiver one. Dan Schneier talked a little bit about that when we interviewed him. Ryan Dunleavy even mentioned that, you know, how he has like that feel to him. But from everything that we know about Darren Waller's time in Las Vegas, he liked splitting time between having his hand in the dirt and then lining out wide. And he didn't really like what Josh McDaniels was having him do, which was kind of solely lining up out wide, not with his hand in the dirt. So this is definitely a camp conversation, since OTAs is like a passing academy.
Yeah.
So we'll see as camp gets closer and see where he's lining up. But that's something that I'm keeping my eye out as the summer kind of develops. How often is Darren Waller lining out wide, and how often is he putting his hand in the dirt and actually being a tight end?
Yeah, I want to actually look up the
splits
from McDaniels. So last year he was 72% split out, which was the most by far, where the other 2021, 20, and 19, he spent 60% or more in line and then less
yeah.
flexed out.
There will be a split, don't get me wrong. And I want him to be lined out wide. Just 70% of the time, it just seemed like he wasn't happy with that role.
Yeah. You lose some of his mismatch, obviously, versus in the slot. They're going to use him in a bunch of different ways. I'm not going to stress about that right now. Anything else before we kick it to Dunleavy?
No, not at all.
All right. Today's episode is sponsored by SeatGeek. If you don't know what SeatGeek is, they're taking out the mix, buying tickets extremely super simple. Simple Man Radio. With over 28 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one rated ticketing app. There are more than 70,000 events every single day on SeatGeek, including sports, concerts, festivals, and more. Taylor Swift seems to be like hot in the streets in New Jersey right now.
Yeah, a lot of
shows. Could have went to SeatGeek. They always want to make sure that you're getting a good deal. So when you're on the app, look for the green dots. Green means good. Red means bad. Every ticket is backed by their buyer guarantee, and SeatGeek is the only site that lets you return your tickets ahead of the event with swaps. We've got the hookup. Use code GIANTS for $20 off your first purchase at SeatGeek. That's $20 off your first purchase with promo code GIANTS. Click the link in the description to download the app. And here's Ryan Dunleavy.
Come on, pay attention in there. Let's go. We got a beautiful day. Work. Play fast. Whoa.
All right, we now welcome on to the program. First time on the show, which is like we've been doing this 5 years. We don't have a lot of first times, but of the New York Post, Ryan Dunleavy, who's been on a hot streak, by the way. And I'll be honest, the Tony Award at first was a joke to us, and now it's become like a real award where I don't want people just picking their favorite reporter. The title is Best Giants Beat Reporter. Not sure if you're a good person, but Best Giants Reporter. So we thought about changing it to a point system by like, hey, does this person break news? Did they mess, taking points away if they mess something up? And the leader would be Ryan Dunleavy. He's been on a hot streak. How you doing, my man?
Good, guys. How are you? I don't know that I need an award named after Kadarius Toney, but I do. There are a lot of great Giants beat writers, so I'm thrilled to even be in the mix this early in the season.
I think I'm putting my vote of endorsement because again, it's all about production. It's a production business, and you've been doing well. So. You seem like you've got an in with this new regime. The Darren Waller news, you didn't officially break, but you hinted at it. I heard you talk with Sean Marash about that one. You got the Daniel Jones news. And then this Ryan Cowden stuff, which we can start with that because that's fresh. We haven't even talked about that. What is his role? Because it's very like the title of it, I don't even have it off the top of my head, is – like not necessarily a real role, but obviously those guys are close, and Cowden has a good resume where he was interviewing for this job a year ago.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to work in the scouting department. What his actual day-to-day responsibilities, I mean, he's going to be a voice Joe Shane trusts in the scouting department, basically. Whether that's, I think it'll be kind of a utility role. I'm sure he'll look at tape. I'm sure he'll go to games. He's just going to be a sounding board that Joe Shane trusts. The title is, I think, a little not as important as what the work he'll be doing is, because as you know, as we've seen with the cheating New England Patriots for many years, you don't really worry about a title. You worry about you get paid to do the job, and you worry, especially if you're still under contract with your last organization that can pay you some money, because then it's offsetting money. You don't want to give a guy a huge title if the Titans are already paying him a lot of money. You can give him a lower title and then a lower paycheck, and he's still getting what he deserves from the Titans, which is, I think, why it's a title that we're so unused to seeing. And so I suspect. And everybody thought, oh, he's going to be the college scouting director. From what I hear, the Giants don't really have any interest in filling the college scouting director title. They have more of a collaborative scouting department, and Cowden will be part of it.
Yeah, executive advisor to the GM. Mm-hmm. That's his role. Is this like a feeling of if Brandon Brown is like hot in the streets, apparently. So is this like a, hey, Ryan Cowden kind of comes in assistant GM if Brandon Brown goes in? I know that's like a year away problem, but is that like a feeling that we get?
Certainly you'd have a guy who has a lot of experience to be that. I think, and I don't have the rules in front of me, guys, but I think if Brandon Brown was to leave, you have to interview a certain number of minority candidates. And so you can't just hand the job to Cowden. And I'm sure Dennis Hickey, who's been here longer and is a high level executive who also knows Shane, I'm sure he'd have something to say about an in-house promotion. There are other guys in the organization, obviously, too. I think it's just you want the best department you can have. And now you have a guy who was an interim GM. I think Hickey was a GM. Shane's a GM. Yeah. You just have a lot of guys who've worn the shoes, who have experienced a lot of different things and who trust each other from shared experiences. Yeah, he could be the next Brandon Brown. But there's no guarantee. There's a lot of really good executives in waiting. There's no, even if the Giants are good again, there's no guarantee Brandon Brown's going to get a job. He's only had, I think, one interview, right? I think he's only had one GM interview. I think it was with the Vikings, maybe. So usually guys have to have 2, 3, 4 interviews. I wouldn't be surprised if Brown's here more than just one more year, probably two.
Is Cowden working with the college or the pro scouting department?
Do you know? Honestly, I don't know that yet. I believe it's going to be the college scouting department. That's what I was told, but I can't say that for 100% certainty. I believe it will be with college, though.
You brought up the director of college scouting, that position. There's no one in it. And Chris Pettit being fired was one of the bigger changes that Joe Shane made. You know, and obviously when you bring in a new GM, it's hard to fire the whole scouting staff, but it was, you know, 2 days after the draft when they did do it. Is that a situation of Shane's waiting for like his perfect person to fill that role, or does he truly just not feel the need to fill that?
I think it's, he doesn't feel the need to fill it. I don't think he's waiting for his perfect person. I think, honestly, I think Mike DeReese, the Giants national scout, did a good job, in that kind of national scouting role. Obviously, as I already mentioned, Hickey kind of filled that job without having that title. He was kind of the leader of that college scouting department. And then they just promoted another one. Was it Marcus Cooper? I think they just promoted.
Yeah, Marcus Cooper.
Yeah, they just promoted him to fellow national scout. So they have two national scouts with DeReese and Cooper. And I think Cooper was doing the SEC. DeReese was doing the... for the Colts, I think he was the East scout. So they have pretty much the whole East covered there with two guys who are co-national scouts and then Hickey. So I think between the three of them, I think they have it all pretty well covered without having a director of college scouting.
This is a time of year, you know, and obviously, you know, you were at OTAs on Thursday. So this is a time of year where obviously you can't take like a ton away from stuff. You know, Dable talked a lot about how this is like a learning period, and Dable just didn't give the media a lot today anyway. And I know you tweeted about that, and that was funny. But basically, there were still some things that you were kind of looking out for today / this week. What were some of those things? Did you find them out? And, you know, what are some things that are on your brain about this Giants team with OTAs? And, you know, that'll lead to some topics.
I was obviously interested to see what Darren Waller looked like, what a healthy Darren Waller looked like on the football field, and what he looks like is a guy who, for a cliche, runs like a deer. I mean, he is just long legged, running down the field, looks like a true number one receiver. Like what you thought you were going to get with Kenny Golladay, maybe, or that true 6'6". Not even like a tight end, you know, like, yeah, you weren't seeing him run like 10-yard curls or ins. He was just run down the sideline and throw the ball up and catch the ball. It was really impressive, actually. But you got to remember, guys, this is what OTAs is. It's a passing camp, right? There is no pass rush. There's really no offensive line. There's no live contact. A lot of times defensive backs are told not to even try to break up the pass. They just run in stride. Guys had a hard time running in stride with Waller. So that was really impressive just to see his athleticism shine. I was interested in some of the depth chart stuff. I think there was a time they went four receivers, and it was Hodgins, Slayton, Campbell, and Waller. Those were the four receivers. Then there was a time Okereke came off. McFadden was the second linebacker in. Thought that was interesting. And then it was just a shock to me that, like, oh, wow, this is – as much as they've upgraded as linebacker, we're still talking about a lot of snaps probably for McFadden, for Beavers, for
Davis, Straw Davis.
Yeah, Jared Davis. He actually got a lot of reps today too. He was, when the Okereke wasn't in run situations, Jared Davis was the main right linebacker. So, like, just kind of some of that stuff was like, where do they line guys up? Schmitz was the first team center. So yeah, that's just kind of some of that depth chart stuff and where they're still weak. You can look at it on paper and you can say, oh, this team's better here, or they're not as good here. But then when you actually see them line up and you're like, oh yeah, they need Deontay Banks to be good because they're still very short at corner. Like that pops to you. Or they need Okereke to be a tackling machine who can cover because there's a big drop off after linebacker one, like just stuff like that as you see them run around.
For sure.
Yeah. Some other depth chart questions I have for you. Is Cordell Flott playing primarily on the outside or in the slot?
So I don't know that I noticed where he lined up. I know I had a conversation with somebody in the Giants recently who said that he was drafted to be a corner in the slot. And they quickly realized last year that even though that's what he was on tape at LSU, in the NFL, it looked like it moved a little fast for him and he's better on the outside. So that's somebody in the Giants told me they expect him to be more of an outside corner, which was not what he was drafted for, but that's where he seemed most comfortable as a rookie.
What do you think of this wide receiver room right now? Because it's a weird logjam of guys who aren't, you know, you don't look at the wide receiver room like, man, that's a great wide receiver room. But you look at wide receiver seven and you're like, that guy might have been an automatic starter on last year's team. Like, now the easy answer is injury is probably going to take care of these questions. But like, who do you see as the odd man out on that group? Because you have essentially, you know, six to seven guys who really aren't special teams contributors, but can play wide receiver in the NFL and be a starter, and you're not stressed about it.
No, I think you said it when you said why injury will take care of it. If there's one thing I've learned covering the Giants, it's that especially at wide receiver and corner, injuries just happen at the hamstring positions. Injuries happen, right? I think what's the stat that I had for years running since Odell Beckham's last game with the Giants, they had only had two quarters of one game where they had their top three receivers, their running back and their tight end.
Oh, terrific.
So it was a wild stat that up until last year. So I think that'll probably take care of it. In a perfect world, well, I think you put Darren Waller as quote unquote wide receiver one with a lot of two tight end sets where Daniel Bellinger is your technical tight end. And then I think the rest of the guys, I think there's a lot of interesting talent that is overlaps to a degree, like Sterling Shepard, Wandale Robinson, Paris Campbell. You could call them versatile receivers if you want. They're all best in the slot. I know they can technically play outside. Shepard did when Golden Tate was here. We know he's best in the slot. Paris Campbell, we know he's best in the slot. So there's a lot of overlapping strengths, but you're right. I think the overall cause, the depth is so much better than it's been. Like there we had years right when Benny Fowler was the number three receiver. CJ Board was the number three receiver. Now we're talking about, is Jamison Crowder going to make the Giants? He's probably on the outside because he's like the fifth receiver, and Colin Johnson can do things, you know, as an outside big target, like a Darius Slayton, like an Isaiah Hodgins, that a Crowder can't do. Well, Crowder would have been wide receiver two at times in 2019 or 2020. And now you're talking about him as wide receiver six.
Let's start hitting some of the big names and big topics. Xavier McKinney's fingers. They're never going to tell us, like, you know, there was the video they put out said he's going to be 100%. Do they think his finger, like, is he ever going to be able to catch the ball the same? Because obviously, like, he's still going to be able to be out there fast, cover well, break up passes. Like, he's going to be a good player. No one's worrying about that. But is he going to be able to catch the ball the same? Or is it kind of just like, hey, his fingers are messed up?
That's a good player. Good question. I think the answer to that is yes. That's what, again, I think you nailed it. And you guys are smart in that regard. Like, the team's not going to come out and tell you, like, no. We don't think so. But when you ask privately, they do think he'll be able to be the same player, which I assume means catching the ball, because he was he had that 1 year where you could tell he was a ball hawk. That's what he was. So he is a guy who could catch the ball. When they say he's going to be the same, I assume that covers catching the ball, being an interception guy. That's what they tell you privately. They expect him to get back to 100%. And they made it seem privately like we kind of overblew when we talked to Xavier in April, how much he was still injured. They think that, you know, he'll be good to go by the start of the season. But you guys do have me looking at his fingers now when he was at the podium today. And I think it was just about, you know, regaining strength and whatnot. I think he'll be fine.
Did any reporters try and, like, candidly get a nice, like, screenshot, a grab of his fingers?
Good question. I don't know if they did. I did not, but I don't know if others did. They probably did. They probably did.
What zooming lens does Ronan have? Because those videos that he puts out are wild.
He does have a very, you know, it's ESPN, right?
Yeah, it's true.
Only the best.
He got money in the budget.
He can afford Taylor Swift concert tickets for his daughter. He can afford a nice Zoom lift.
It's very true.
Yeah, so I've been on vacation, so I haven't been keeping up, like, with stuff, everything. But I went through all my, like, the reporters' tweets after practice, and I'm like, okay, about 60% practice tweets, 40% Taylor Swift tweets.
Yeah. There was Dayball's going with his daughter. Jordan's going with his daughter. There was a lot of Taylor Swift music at practice, a Tina Turner song at practice on it, obviously. So, there was a lot of Taylor Swift, talk today. The lines to buy, merchandise were already lined up at, MetLife today before the concert. So it's not a time you want to be around MetLife Stadium this weekend.
You got the hell out.
Oh yeah.
Is that a song lyric, Justin?
Well, excuse me?
Was that a song lyric?
No. Okay. It was a genuine. First of all, there would be no Taylor Swift without Shania Twain. That's just my two cents about it. So I kind of dismiss Taylor Swift. It's not a hot take for me, but the average person, it's a hot take. All right, we'll get back to Ryan Dunleavy in just one second, but we got to talk about a brand new sponsor, and they're called Fume. Not everything in a bad habit is wrong. So instead of a drastic, uncomfortable change, why not just remove the bad from your habit? And today's sponsor is Fume. They are an innovative, award-nominated flavor air device that helps you do just that. Like, the fact that you can make the air taste in a certain flavor, the fact that Fume can do that is actually kind of freaking nuts. Flavored air device. I would like the air to be flavored. Instead of electronics, Fume is completely natural. Instead of vapor, Fume uses flavored air, which is a crazy concept. And instead of harmful chemicals, Fume uses all natural, delicious flavors. I like things that are delicious. Shopping is something we all put off because it's hard. But switching to Fume is easy, enjoyable, and even fun. Helps you break some habits like, I'm a big nail biter. I gotta stop doing that. Head to tryfume.com and use code JOMBOY to save 10% off when you get the Journey Pack today. That's tryfume.com and use code JOMBOY to save an additional 10% off your order today. You'll be glad you did. Now let's talk about Saquon Barkley with Ryan Dunleavy. All right. Well, speaking of hot topics on the street, you know, we're almost 20 minutes in, so I'm proud of us that we haven't talked about it yet. Saquon Barkley, you know, I'll just throw it out. You're hot in terms of what you're hearing and getting scoops, getting news. What are you hearing? Where are we at with Saquon Barkley?
I wish I could tell you there have been significant developments. There have not been significant developments. We are at a standstill. The Giants are not budging on what they have offered. He is not budging on what he expects. Look, here I'll tell you what it really boils down to, guys, and this is on the media ourselves. Everybody has reported the $13 million that he was per year average that he turned down after the season. Everybody has reported that it was about $12.5 million that he turned down in the season. What nobody has reported, including myself, I haven't been able to find it out despite trying very hard, is the guaranteed money. And what I do know is he can get tagged this year. He is tagged this year for $10.1 million. If he is tagged again next year, it's $12.4 million. So that's $22 million. Saquon Barkley is not going to take a multi-year contract offer where the guaranteed money is less than $22 million. He's just not going to take it. So that leads me to believe that they have not offered $22 million guaranteed. I don't know that. That's just the way this business works. Talking to agents, talking to sources, he's going to want at least the two franchise tags guaranteed. What we're all doing is reporting the contract average, because that's what we've been able to find out from our sources, myself included. No one's been able to find out the guarantee. The guarantee is what really matters here. I mean, we have Alvin Kamara's contract, to use it as an example. He technically makes $15 million a year, but he has a huge number in the last year of his contract that's non-guaranteed that he put in, him and his agent put in there to make him a $15 million a year running back. But I want to say the last year is like $28 million that he's never going to see. So he's really a $12.5 million a year running back. So Saquon and his team know, I think, that the average per year isn't that important. It's the guaranteed money. And I think that's where the holdup is between the two sides.
Yeah. We've talked about this kind of over and over again about how like Saquon, the Giants have won like the PR game in this, at least on the outside looking in. And I mean, this is, I think his team and say, like, he's lost himself millions and millions of dollars. So here's how I'll bring in Daniel Jones's contract negotiations here too, because his team operated that beautifully, and his, you know, change of agents kind of like at the 2 minute mark worked out beautifully for him. What I feel like there's something that Saquon Barkley can learn from how the Daniel Jones contract negotiations went, because you were all on top of that too, where numbers that were being leaked out, Daniel Jones wanting this, the Giants are at this point. So what do you think like his team, or at least himself, can learn from that Daniel Jones process too? Or is there something to learn from it?
I think it's too late, honestly. I think the ship has kind of sailed there in terms of what they could have learned. And it's unfortunate. Like, look, Daniel had all the leverage. Saquon had a lot of leverage, I think, during the season when he was having a great season. And, you know, so much of Daniel's success was dependent on having Saquon. As soon as it became the franchise tag 7 minutes before the deadline, when they looked like they were going to have to franchise tag Daniel and they got the deal done, from that point on, I don't really know what Saquon hasn't had any leverage. I think the next time Saquon would have leverage, a bunch of us were talking about this at practice today, actually, the next time Saquon would have leverage, I think, is once training camp starts, once preseason games start, once the regular season starts, and you see how the offense could struggle without Saquon Barkley. Let's put it this way. I think there is the Giants, the fans, especially the ones on social media, I think are underselling how important Saquon is to the Giants. And obviously, I don't think anybody needs to know this, but obviously I'm very pro Saquon Barkley. Like, my tweets, I think, show that I think he is incredibly valuable to this organization. So I think the next time he would have leverage is once the game start and you're like, wow, Daniel can't run the ball nearly as effectively if the other option the defense is worried about is Matt Breida. Like, I think once that happens, it's going to be like, oh, wow, they really need a great run. This offense is built that they need. If it's not Saquon Barkley, they need somebody a hell of a lot better than whoever else they have. And that's no offense to anybody there. So I think that's the next time we would have leverage. The problem is, by that point, he can't have leverage because July 15th is the franchise deadline. And after then, you can't negotiate a long-term deal. So the next time he's going to have leverage is after a point where he can no longer negotiate a contract. So I don't think there is a what they I think they tried to copy what Daniel Jones's camp did. And I appreciate you noticing that. You know, I was on top of that, is they set an unrealistically high asking price, $48 million, with the intent of getting close to $40 million, or getting 40 or about 41. Shoot for the stars and you get to 40. If you go in and you say we want 42, you're not going to end up at 40. You're going to end up at 37. So that the Giants wanted 33 or whatever the franchise tag was. They wanted 48, and voila, they got to 40, which is really what they wanted the whole time. And Saquon, I think, did something very similar, went in and asked for, you know, his team asked for $16 million, knowing that he wasn't going to get $16 million, but figuring that would get you to 14 and a half or 15. And it's just not how it works for running backs. And if that's not how it worked for running backs in October, everything that's happened to running backs since then, including most recently Austin Eckler, has only worked further against him.
Yep. Why hasn't Saquon's agents, though, like, leaked out the guaranteed money? Because, like I've said, like we've said the whole thing, like, it's, I'm not going to harp on the average annual value because I don't know the guaranteed money, but if the guaranteed money's bad, like, that would be my first move as his agent, like, talking uninformed here. It's like, I'll leak out the guaranteed money, even if I lie about it a little bit. Like, and the only thing they've done, it seems, is reply to Mage on Twitter saying this isn't true and not expounding on it at all. Where it's like, if it was bad, like, I feel like that'd be agent 101, like, leak out how bad the guaranteed money is.
That is the great mystery in all this, is if it was bad, you would think they would do that. The one, when I've poked around on that, what I've heard is that Saquon is the team guy and would not want his team leaking information. He is not the kind of guy who would want to be his people around him leaking information. He would not want to make it look like he is creating bad blood here. And he does. That's what I've heard when I've asked around, hey, why doesn't somebody do this? Is Saquon would be angry at anybody in his camp who did that.
That's wild. It's hard for him to say that he'll miss games, though, if he's not even willing to leak out a little bit.
Has anybody said he's going to miss games? I don't think there's any.
No, but that's his leverage, is to miss games.
I think it showed you when he went to Arizona that with his team, he has no intention of missing games. He loves football. He loves his teammates, loves to win. This is about business. So he's not going to sign the franchise tag before he has to. He's not going to come to voluntary stuff. He's not going to do anything for the Giants, but for his teammates, he's going to do everything. He's going to go, he's going to make sure he's in shape. He's going to go to the offseason. He's going to go to their things. He's not going to do anything business related. He's going to do everything football related. So I think when push comes to shove, they'll be at the football games.
Where do you think this is landing? Him playing on the tag and being there week two of camp, week four of camp, or, you know, Monday before Cowboys prep?
Yeah, I think we're landing on closer to Monday before Cowboys prep. That's kind of maybe it's a week before that. Maybe it's after the preseason games are over. That I think there's 2 weeks now before between the end of the preseason and the start of the regular season. Somewhere in there is, I think, where we're landing. And if he has a good sense of humor, he should come in and say, all right, I'm here. Running backs don't really matter, right, guys? So it doesn't matter that I missed 3 weeks of training camp, right? It doesn't really matter. All that matters for a running back is you don't really, all you have to do is play in the games. All the other stuff doesn't really matter for a running back. So here I am. So.
Well, the crazy thing is his best year, he missed basically all of training camp that rookie year. Well, not all of training camp, but a good chunk of it before getting banged up. And obviously, we know Saquon's not going to come in out of shape.
No, that's it. That's another. The Giants don't have to worry about him coming in out of shape. They know he's going to work his ass off. So that's another. I mean, that's another thing. They don't really have
Ryan, this is so bizarre because the leverage that Saquon Barkley has is to miss football games for the Giants, but he will refuse to do that. So if the Giants know that, if Saquon Barkley knows that, then it's just delaying the inevitable of signing the tag.
But again, there's no leverage in missing football games because at that point he can't negotiate a extension anyway. The deadline all passed. So there's no leverage even in missing football games.
When can he sign an extension? Is it like end of the season or?
Yes.
And after the season or like?
After July 15th, it goes to after the season.
After the season. Okay.
It's not March. It's literally like January 8th or whatever that he could sign an extension. Yeah.
So they're coming off of a winning season. Do you see it affecting the locker room at all? Obviously, those guys are want there, but do you think it will change anything from day to day? Because, I mean, Dex got his money. DJ got his money. Thomas is going to get his money. McKinney's contract will be a fascinating one because I really have no good prediction on it. But I don't see it as being – I mean, the vibes seem good from the outside looking in.
Yeah, I would say that's for the most part, my experience covering the NFL for 6 years is like guys want each other to get paid, but mostly they want themselves to get paid. So yes, Daniel wants Saquon to get paid, but like he got his, and like Dexter wants Saquon to get paid, but he got his. So it's not like a rallying cry in the locker room of like the Giants are cheap and they're not paying anybody and we're not going to play hard for them. If you're insert guy here who if you're Kayvon, like you think you're going to get yours because you think you're Dexter Lawrence, not Saquon Barkley, like you think you know the Giants are paying my teammates, they just happen not to be paying this one guy who I would love to see get paid, but that's not really relative to me. I'm going to get mine because he got his. So that's not speaking to this group in particular. That's speaking to 6 years of talking to agents and NFL players is that's generally the perception is they believe they'll fit in with the norm, not the exception. And right now paying guys is the norm for the Giants and Saquon is the exception.
Yeah. How hard of a topic was John Michael Smith's dead snap today?
It was asked about. I blame you guys for it, right? Yeah. I blame you guys. So here's a funny story. I covered Rutgers when they were using the dead snap in like 2016, and I had forgotten all about it. I don't think I had heard the term dead snap in like 6 years, and then they drafted Schmitz, and I think it was you guys, right? Like, who made a big deal about it on
Twitter. Oh, yeah, we were on it. I had, like, 10 tweets about it.
And then you guys did it. And then Jordan asked about it, at Dash Schmitz about it. And then I was like, where have I heard that term before? And I, like, Googled, like, dead snap. Like, one of the first things that came up was, like, my own article from, like, 6 years ago about Rutgers. And I was like, wow, I had totally forgotten this thing even existed. And so then, yeah. So how hot a topic was it? Daniel was asked, I think, 3 questions about it. And basically he said he told Schmitz, it's fine. Keep doing it. It's accurate. I'm good with it. So, yes, I don't know when I would have realized that he was doing it. I'd like to think eventually, but I definitely did not realize before you tweeted it. So you're on the snap beat. I did not notice.
Oh, yeah. That's what OTAs are for when you're not a beat reporter. It's like find one or two, three, you know, like, yeah. Do I want to get excited about the Darren Waller big play tweets? Yeah, but I like tell myself you can't do that. So get excited about Green Dot. Green dot and John Michael Smith snaps. Those are the things we can
green dot. They're using multiple green dots right now. So McKinney.
I was excited when I saw the Okereke picture, and then the next day I saw a picture with McKinney on it.
So they're using multiple at the same time, which I think is something they did last year at this time too. I mean, basically what they do is instead of alternating days, they just have a bunch of guys wear them simultaneously, and then that's how they judge. That's how they judge who's, you know, right for the job. McKinney wants the job, I think.
He does.
I think he will end up probably being the guy. If you ask me right now, I think McKinney will end up probably being the guy, but Okereke obviously has experience too. It'll be one of those two, but McKinney wants it so bad. I have a hard time believing that they'll tell him no.
It would be hard to take it away from it because McKinney was like the plan all last year. And I think it's Steve Serby had an interview with Kafka and Wink a couple weeks ago after the draft.
Yeah.
And he brought up Okereke. He's like, we haven't had a linebacker do it since CJ Mosley, which I think was 2019 or 2018. So he brought up Okereke. So those are things we get.
They do like the top down look that a safety gives them at the defense, which makes sense, right? Like the middle linebacker has to look behind him, look in front of him, look to his left, look to his right. I do know that the defensive coaches on this team, Wink or other guys, whoever it is, I do know for a fact that they like the top-down look that a safety gives them at the defense.
Yeah. The question will be like how much – I think it's just – Xavier McKinney to me is one of the more intriguing players on the roster because he was so good in 2021 – and we knew that even if he'd be really good this past season, was not going to have the same production that he had in Patrick Graham's scheme. Like, they were totally opposite types of schemes.
But he actually likes the scheme better than he likes
which is weird.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, and that's the weird thing is McKinney has kind of trashed the past coaches, which is, like, right. Weird because, like, hey, I get if you trash them on the – if you're on the offensive side. But defensively, like, they put McKinney in the best situation to get paid. Yeah. So even if you play just as good in this defense, you're not going to get the – same type of pay from the outside, and then gets the responsibility a couple times where there's 10 men on the field for touchdowns. The eight, even if they're not holding it totally against him, like the ATV thing, that ballers the shit out of them, you know? So it's, I think he's the most intriguing player, like predicting what happens with him, how much money does he get paid by the Giants? Baltimore has, you know, let guys walk at the safety position. So I think he's just one of the more fascinating players.
It certainly helped certainly helped his future here that they let Julian go because they're very thin, obviously, at safety. He is not a guy – I just asking around, like, he can't – like, he's going to get to free agency because they can't really pay him now because he was injured last year. He wouldn't get anywhere near what he believes he's a top safety. So he's going to want that money. So he's on obviously a mission this year, but I think you guys hit on a really interesting point about Xavier McKinney from just being around him as much as I've been is he is really not about like me and how much you can make. And he really is about like desperately trying to like make this thing come together and win. Like he knows he had a great season under Patrick Graham. And like you said, he knows that defense was not going to work. So he is very much all about like the sum of the parts and not him. So like, I think that him, like, you're right. Like guys who have individual success rarely speak out against schemes or coaches. And even though that scheme put him in a great position, he was not a fan of it in terms of winning. So he is much more of a fan of this in terms of what it will allow the Giants to be able to do, even though it doesn't highlight his own attributes as much, which I think is a really unique, commendable trait in an NFL locker room.
And the Saquon situation plays into him too, because if Saquon gets a long-term deal, you have the franchise tag at your disposal for McKinney. I don't think there's any other players that would fall under the category needing that. We'll finish off with some lighthearted stuff. Who's the player like interviewing the most? Or go ahead, Justin.
Well, no, yeah, even before we get to Tony stuff and some casual stuff, this question could flop, but 1 minute into Daniel Jones's presser today, I saw him smile and look way more comfortable, more than at any other point in his career in New York so far. So this is why this question could flop, because it's like, you know, could I be reaching? But we're 35 minutes into this interview, so maybe I am reaching. Do you think the contract extension, and this is just human nature too, because I can easily see this answer being yes. Do you think the contract extension and Daniel Jones's security now is now making him feel a little bit more comfortable as like the Giants quarterback and the leader of this team?
I think there is undoubtedly that is true. Like, I think he did a pretty good job hiding how hurt he was last year that they declined his fifth year option. I think most people in that spot would have been talking about chips on their shoulders and whatnot. And he's so robotic that he never really said any of that. But just from my reporting within after the season through March, I learned a lot about how much that bothered him. So, yes, I do think there is a part of him now that thinks, you know, the Giants are more quote unquote his team, and he's not. You know, he'll never say this, but people around him would tell you, I think, that there's more of a sense of, okay, he's earned his place. He's not just like Eli Manning's successor, mini Eli, Eli 2.0. Like, this is the Daniel Jones era or whatever. I do think there is a comfort that comes with that. Do I think that all of a sudden he's going to be anecdotal and no insightful and all? No, I mean, there's a gag I do where I put his quotes into a robot voice and play them out loud. That I still think that's going to probably happen. I still don't think he's going to give you much, but I do think behind the scenes, he is much more comfortable as, like, you know, much more comfortable in who he is and the place he has earned. And not just it comes with the contract, guys. I think that would sell it short. I would think that would be selling Daniel Jones short. I think also a lot comes with success. He had success, and that's obviously very important towards Bill. You could say you're confident, but if you're whatever, with 13-30, you don't really have a right to be confident. He had success last year, and I think that, as much or not more than the money, comes with him starting to feel like he belongs.
Yeah, he's impressive at the ability to not answer a question. I mean, you could ask him, hey, Dan, do you love your mother? And he'd be like, you know, I'd certainly say so, but I love the whole, my team too. And
I love all my family members. And, you know, she's a good mother. And, you know, my focus on the team right now, but sure, you know, I wouldn't be here without her. And, you know, the best I've ever seen at saying nothing.
Who's your favorite player to interview and get quotes from and stuff?
I love Darius Slayton. I love Darius Slayton. I love Julian Love. I like the guys who you can talk to about stuff that isn't just football. Cause, like, you know, guys, you guys are probably better at X's and O's than I am. Like, I don't pretend in any world to be, you know, X's and O's genius. I write what my sources tell me. I write what I see. I write feature stories. I write, you know, stuff like that. I like guys that you can talk to, that I like guys that, you know, ask you about you when you ask them about them. So Slayton and Love were just good human beings. I love talking to Andrew Thomas, because Andrew Thomas's football answers are like, it's so hard to get a guy to actually give you a football answer. Everything's like, oh, you know, that's what the scheme tells us to do. And that's what these football players have been trained to do, is like, not give too much away. Andrew Thomas can speak football to you in a way that, if you've never played offensive tackle, it still makes sense what he has to do on each play. I think that's a really impressive skill.
Yeah.
So I really enjoy talking to Andrew Thomas. Nick Gates was one of my favorites of all time. So I spent time at Nick Gates's locker. We talked for 15 minutes, and then I'd be like, oh yeah, I gotta ask you something about football.
Yeah, you basically mentioned all of our guys. Thomas, because Thomas is a little bit more reserved person, you know, like, obviously he answers questions. We tried to open him up with some like personal life questions, and we try to do that with player interviews anyways. But it was, like you said, it was like the talking about football scheme stuff where he really opened up. And I look back at that interview and I'm like, man, I wish we would just talk ball the whole 25 minutes because that's where he like gave real answers, talked about this player, what this guy's strengths are and stuff.
Most guys do not do that. And he is really good at telling you the football stuff, but without doing it like a where you're like, I don't really understand what you're saying. He does.
He also makes me feel really smart because I like talk about him in the offensive line report and he'll like say the same thing in his interview. I'm like, make sure I got to clip this and quote you the offensive line report with this. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Justin, do you got anything else?
Guys.
No, I mean, can
we touch
on... I
think I just told you what my good guy ballot was. I think I just accidentally revealed.
Did you vote for Julian Love?
I voted for Love, Slayton, and who would my third have been? I think Love, Slayton, and Gates were my three guys last year.
Did Tony get a vote in 2021?
Certainly not for me.
I know people don't like that we talk about him, but it's just... His interviews to me were the most fascinating thing about the year 2021.
I didn't really, I'm not going to pretend I didn't really get to know him ever. I did not like that he laughed in our faces as much.
And see, that's where I'm the outside.
I try to treat every player with respect and I did not feel like that was a two-way street.
That's why those interviews were insane, because he would just straight up laugh in your I'm glad that you answered answer to truthfully, because we've asked the other reporters like, oh, no human being likes to go to an interview and know this guy's not going to take it serious. He's going to laugh at everything I say. He's going to try and make me look like a fool.
Yeah.
And that can't be enjoyable.
Yeah. I don't think it affected my coverage of him. Like, you know, if he was a terrific player, then I think I would have wrote about how he was a terrific player. But no, I didn't like being.
We asked like Jordan and Duggan and stuff like, oh, I don't mind him laughing right in my face and making fun of me. It's like, yes, you do.
Maybe they didn't. Maybe they didn't. I'm a different.
Jordan guy. Did. Jordan did.
Yeah. Jordan likes to play too cool for school.
Yeah. I'm a different guy. I don't, you know, I'm a little bit of a different, as you know, if you've, you know, listened to Jordan's podcast where, you know, I don't eat salads and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like,
that was quite enjoyable.
Watch movies and stuff like that. Whatever. I'm a different guy. No, I don't like when you laugh in my face. Like I tried to
put that doesn't make you different.
Kenny Golladay had some of the most, you know, uncomfortable interviews I've ever been around, in terms of like, we're just asking you like about living up to this contract and you're not, and like, you know, dropping passes. And he was never disrespectful. It was never, you know what I mean? It was never confrontational. We were never going to be friends with him, but it was 6 minutes of, I'm going to ask you a question. You understand I have a job to do. I understand you have a job to do. Let's get this 6 minutes over. And now that I say this, my favorite player ever to interview in 6 years, my favorite Giants interview by far is Evan Engram. By far my favorite.
That's who I thought of. That 2020 season, man.
The ultimate Mr. Accountability, understood your job, you know, didn't hold it against you. I mean, obviously had so many tough games and so many games where, you know, where you were asking him questions about drops and whatnot, and just the ultimate accountability, anecdotal, personable, was, oh, you know, a hello, you could stop by, chat, like, learned your name, which is a big thing for me. I'm not going to lie. Like, if you learn my name, then I feel like, okay, you want to like have a relate. This isn't just about 6 minutes of a business transaction. Like, you're, you know, Evan Engram, I say, is my favorite Giant interview in 6 years. Yeah, definitely.
Drops are the easiest way to get into a fan base's bad graces. And then on top of that, drops that consistently turned into interceptions and then fumbles. Uncanny. Too. I wish that happened to someone who wasn't such a nice guy like Evan Engram, because Evan Engram is one of the nicest guys in the world. But it's like that year, we rightfully so had to basically shit on him almost every single week. And now the scheme didn't help him, but like part of that was the flaws of his game as well. You know, it's like, so it was like, I hated like talking. So I knew that it affected him negatively, but it's like, you kind of have to. And then obviously some of that turns way nastier than it should.
And you like guys who are honest, and he was always honest about, you know, yeah, it's wearing on me. Yeah, like I feel he was never like, you know, when a guy's lying, he's like, no, I block out the outside noise. Well, we can tell you don't block out the outside noise. So he was always honest about where he was and his head, where in his headspace, and he never blamed anybody, never blamed the media. It was never like, you guys are writing terrible things about me. He understood, like, if you score two touchdowns, we write about that. And if you have a drop against the Eagles, that's not our fault. Like, he understood that. I always had the most respect for Evan Engram.
Bobby, I gotta be honest, Bobby. And Ryan, I'll be honest with you too, because you're part of this conversation. I'm gonna campaign for Ryan Dunleavy, Tony Award winner.
Oh, me too. Me too.
A whole season, boys. We got a whole
no. Season. Well, the campaign. I mean, this is the kickoff to the campaign. And I will try and dig up the tweets of any time that I try and break insignificant significant news. You will find it, and you will give me credit, which that is a huge part of the Tony Award, you know, winning candidacy. So I'm going to campaign for it.
Yes, there's a few things that go into being a Tony Award winner. One, doing your job well, breaking news.
Two, do you kiss our ass?
You're winning the year. One, being nice to us. You always give us the hat tip. Even when other beat reporters don't want to, if you give us the hat tip first, then they have to pile on and be like, Bobby had it first, Justin had it first, blah, blah, blah.
Danny King had it first.
And then also saying what people don't want to hear, even if it's true, which I think is a lot of reporters, because of social media, it's kind of ruined that aspect of reporting a little bit.
I mean, I get attacked by fans quite a bit. So, but you just...
All right, well, that was enough ass kissing for 45 minutes. Ryan, we appreciate you. Everyone follow. It's at R Dunleavy.
R-Y.
Correct? R-Y Dunleavy, New York Post. Appreciate you as always. And we'll have to get you in the van in August.
Training camp.
I'll be there.
Yeah, get ready to be uncomfortable.
I'm comfortable being uncomfortable.
All right, we'll see you then.
All right.
Hey, Shirley, you better hope I never get back in there. I will kick your Hey, baby, let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs. Have some fun.
All right, thank you to Ryan Dunleavy from the New York Post. Hopefully a future Tony Award winner. That's right. We are stamping our stamp of approval on Ryan Dunleavy for Tony Award winner 2023. That's the year that we're in. And speaking of award winners, I want to talk to you about Manscaped. Because if you haven't heard, Manscaped, they're the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. They're traveling north of your South Pole with their revolutionary Beard Hedger Pro Kit. That's right. They've now launched the brand new Weed Whacker 2.0 too. So they got you covered all around your beautiful face. Manscaped now has a brand new nose and ear hair trimmer. I need it. My nose hair grows like weeds. It's time to upgrade your toolbox by going to manscaped.com and using our code GIANTS for 20% off plus free shipping. I mentioned that there's a pro kit. There's a beard pro kit. They have a beard shampoo and conditioner. It comes with beard oil, beard balm, a bunch of stuff. The Pro Beard Kit also comes with three free gifts, a beard brush, comb, and scissors to ensure your beard is ready to impress. I've heard great things about the beard brush, and it's all for free. If you go to manscaped.com and get 20% off and free shipping with our code GIANTS at manscaped.com. Always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped, Bobby Skinner. You'll be glad you did.
Be glad you did. Thanks again, Ryan Dunleavy, for coming on. I think I'm just going to live in Spain now.
Yeah, you're enjoying it?
It's just a much more simple life. So I'm going to work the olive tree farms.
Yeah.
And this is my last episode of Talking Giants.
Okay, sure. See ya.
No, but I'll be back. I'll be back next Wednesday.
Did you see my content idea for you?
Yeah, I mean, that cat is literally a demon. Like, at first, I'm like, oh, this cat's cool. And then it's like, no, this cat is indeed not cool. It is an enemy of mine.
I just need like somebody to be recording you.
Going to every single window trying to get into the house.
I just need somebody to be recording you as you record animals doing things.
Yeah, I mean, I saw D. Rickers responded with the Andy Samberg, like, how's your mother doing to the chicken?
Yeah. If you just talk to animals.
That is how I interact with animals. And children too. Like, hey, I don't do the cuckoo caca. I'm like, what's up? What's up, William? How you doing, my man? Like, you know, I just talk to everything as an adult.
Fantastic. Whether
it's this globe. Like, you know. What's up, globe? Globe? How you doing, my B? It is what it is. All right, that's an episode. We'll be back Tuesday. Haven't decided exactly what we're doing, but might have a friend of the show that everybody loves on. Haven't talked to him in a while, so we'll see what happens. Maybe we'll get some insane news. Maybe someone will get arrested. Maybe I'll get arrested in the airport. We appreciate you by smuggling some type of stuff back into the United States. Watch out for me.
Give me a cigar.
Okay, I could do that. They're like, yeah, I'll do that.
Thank you.
Let me write that down because I will forget.
I'll buy you more stock cars at Charlotte.
Bam, perfect. Gift giving. All right, we appreciate you guys. We'll see you on Tuesday. Enjoy your weekend. Until then, let's go Big Blue.
John Boy Media has a new teammate. It's iHeart Podcasts. What does it mean? John Boy Media shows can now be found over at the Dan Patrick Show. That's right. How cool is that? Wake and Jake and Jimmy's Three Things have joined the iHeart Podcast and Dan Patrick Show family. And the best part, they'll still continue to be the same shows you know and love. If you couldn't tell, we're excited about this one. And thank you guys for listening.